Our next speaker is Dr. Amy Middleman. We're fortunate to have Dr. Middleman here today. She works as the director of the Pediatric Core Clerkship for the Baylor College of Medicine, and in addition, serves as the director of Adolescent and Young Adult Immunization for the Texas Children's Hospital Vaccination Center. She wears many hats in the world of adolescent immunization, including serving as a member of the board of directors for the Society of Adolescent Medicine. And we're fortunate to have her here today to speak to us about immunization site preferences among primarily Hispanic middle school parents. Thank you.
Thank you, and I want to thank the National Immunization Conference for allowing me to present these findings today. Our disclosures are as listed. My paper's making too much noise. This slide should look familiar since it's the third time you've heard similar information this morning. There are several new vaccine recommendations for adolescents, and adolescents are less likely than younger children to present for preventive care. There are multiple barriers to adolescent immunization, including issues of access, information tracking, consent, time constraints, finances, and disparities, primarily based on race and ethnicity and socioeconomic status. School-based immunization programs address many of these barriers. Prior research indicates that actually 40% of primarily Hispanic elementary school parents prefer the school for immunization. Little is known, however, about middle school parents' preferences and practices regarding adolescent vaccination. As part of a larger school-based immunization program, we set forth to gather information from middle school parents regarding medical home enrollment, immunization practices, immunization site preferences, and immunization registry enrollment. Schools were chosen based on the school student enrollment in the percent in the free lunch program at the schools. Among the 8 middle schools that participated, 5 schools subsequently received an immunization program. Also, 4 of these schools actually had school-based clinics on site. Brief questionnaires were distributed to students, directed to parents and guardians. The return of the questionnaires resulted in entrance in a drawing for some iPod shuffles. And the questionnaires were collected from the school nurses, who we presume also then collected them from the school teachers. 7,300 questionnaires were distributed, approximately. 1,838 questionnaires were returned for an overall return rate of 25%. Higher return rate was noted among schools that also were going to receive the immunization program, so we assumed that those schools were sort of more highly invested in getting questionnaires back. There were no significant differences in the results when looking at the lower participation rate schools out of the analyses. The return rate was likely affected. Even though this was similar to other return rates in this population, the return rate may have been affected by the questionnaire distribution, which was shortly after Hurricane Ike hit the Texas coast in the fall of 2008. The analyses that were performed on this questionnaire included frequencies, chi-square, and logistic regressions to determine odds ratios and 95% confidence intervals. As you can see, 56% of the parents reported that they were the parents of a female child, 44% male. 41% of the parents indicated that they were the parent of a sixth grader, 32% seventh grader, 27% eighth grader. Gender and grade of the child had no association with any of the outcome variables. You can see from this slide that the majority of the parents self-identified as Hispanic, with 87%. 35% of the parents indicated that English was the primary language spoken at home. And 76% of parents indicated that their child was enrolled in a medical home. The variables of race and ethnicity and language spoken at home were very closely associated. So because the population was not as diverse in race and ethnicity, the language variable was chosen for the majority of the analyses. Of those who responded to the questionnaire and indicated a medical home, 7% reported that the medical home was a clinic at school. 20% indicated a clinic or doctor's office at a hospital. 73% indicated a clinic or doctor's office in the neighborhood. Those speaking primarily English at home had a 2.4 greater odds of reporting having enrollment in a medical home. And of note, enrollment in a medical home was not associated with the presence of a school-based clinic on site at the child's school. Having a medical home was associated with having a shot more recently, with 32% of those who indicated they had a medical home having a shot in the past 6 months, and 20% of those indicating the same who did not have a medical home. It was also associated with having a medical visit more recently, with 58% of those indicating that they had a medical home having had a visit in the past 6 months. Having a school-based clinic at the school was also not associated with these outcomes. 86% of respondents reported that their child had had a medical visit in the past 2 years, and 71% reported a shot in the past 2 years. They indicated the site of their last shot for their child as the medical home. That was 56% of parents. 24% indicated a city county clinic. 7% indicated a mobile clinic. 4% indicated a school-based program. And I will indicate there are few in Texas. And 1% indicated a pharmacy. Looking at just those parents who indicated that their child was enrolled in a medical home, 66% indicated that their last shot for their child was actually administered in the medical home, indicating that 34% of those enrolled in a medical home actually accessed immunizations elsewhere for their child. Although 86% of parents did report a medical visit in the past 2 years, only 38% answered yes to the question, are doctors recommending vaccines for 11 to 12-year-olds? Those speaking primarily English at home had a 1.5 greater odds of answering yes to that question. In terms of site preferences, 65% of parents indicated that they preferred their child get a shot at the medical home. 41% indicated that they get their shots at the school or a school-based program. These percentages, if you look at them all, do add up to over 100% because parents were able to access more than one response. Of note, again, the presence of school-based clinic at school was associated with the choices of three sites in particular. Parents at schools with clinics were more likely to prefer school-based programs and were less likely to prefer the emergency department or the mobile unit as sites for their children's immunizations. Among those not choosing school-based programs, so they reported they did not check off the box that they would have their child immunized at a school-based program, 8% noted that they would not do so because it is not the school's business to worry about health issues. 4% indicated it's not safe to get shots at school. 67% of parents of middle school students actually indicated that they wanted to be present when my child gets shots. Several respondents actually wrote in concerns regarding record keeping, and they did not choose the school-based clinic because they were concerned the records would not be transmitted to the people who needed them. Those who spoke primarily English at home by self-report were more likely to choose the medical home as a site preference and less likely to choose the emergency room, city-county clinic, mobile unit, and school-based program. Among those who did not prefer school-based programs, again, those who wanted to be present were present for the shots were more likely to be those speaking primarily English at home and were also more likely to be those with a medical home or having their child enrolled in a medical home. And there's the Texas state for you. Some parents noted record keeping as a concern for school-based programs. Texas MTRAC is actually an opt-in registry program here in Texas. 56% of the study population reported that their child was enrolled in MTRAC. Those speaking primarily English at home were significantly less likely to report registry enrollment in the Texas program. The validity of the registry enrollment, actually, registry enrollment responses is planned. So this study had some limitations. It has potentially limited generalizability. This was a specific population in Texas. There was a relatively low return rate, although we did better than the pharmacists, I now realize, so I feel good about that. But the sample size did provide significant power. And of course, these were self-reported data, and the validity of the data is therefore unclear. So in conclusion, knowledge regarding 11 to 12-year-old shots is poor among primarily Hispanic parents of middle school students. Primary language at home needs to be taken into account. It is associated with knowledge of shots, medical home enrollment, registry enrollment, and immunization site preference. Parents who do not prefer school-based immunization programs do report a desire to be present for their child's shots. And despite enrollment in medical homes, many adolescents receive shots at sites other than the medical home. So the implications are that preventive healthcare education and access initiatives are needed for non-English speaking communities in Texas. We need to improve access. And to improve program success, school-based programs may choose to immunize with extended hours before or after school so that parents can be present for their child's immunizations. Multiple strategies are needed, including medical home and school-based immunization programs, to access this important population of children. I'd like to acknowledge the Houston Independent School District helped a lot. That is a picture of John Marshall Middle School in Houston, Texas, which was one of our school sites, and we're very proud of all of our school sites. The Harris County Hospital District, who helped with immunizations later in the program. The Memorial Hermann Hospital System, Ms. Loretta Collins, and Dr. Claudia Kozinets. And I thank you very much for your attention.
Well, thanks to all of our speakers. We'd like to open the floor for questions, please, and I think this session is being recorded, so if any folks who have questions could please come to the microphones, that would be most helpful.
Rafael Harpaz and CIRD at CDC for Dr. Middleman. That was very interesting. Are there data regarding when vaccines are provided in the medical home are required? When required vaccines are administered in the medical home, is there evidence that there's a spillover effect, that other prevention services are offered at the same time when the vaccines are administered? And to what extent is that an issue in terms of giving vaccines in the medical home versus elsewhere?
That's actually a great question. I think there's a CDC RFA that went out about that, sort of to see whether or not comprehensive sort of preventive healthcare measures are increased in frequency when kids come in for required shots. I don't think we have evidence to say that yet. I'm assuming that one of your concerns is that if you start giving shots at alternative sites, you lose that ability to sort of draw people in with the shot in order to get comprehensive services.
If it's not happening, it's not happening.
Right.
That's why I ask whether it is happening.
Right. And I don't think we have data. My thoughts about that are probably they're a little bit perhaps off the beaten track, but I think that right now a lot of adolescents aren't receiving the comprehensive care and aren't receiving immunizations. And one of my concerns is that we aren't utilizing the schools where children really are for the majority of the day very well. And so I think school-based programs, not necessarily school-based clinics, which I think are fabulous, but school-based programs that actually generate the interest as well, I think are going to be really important, because what we may want to do is see where we are successful administering the immunizations and actually have some of the preventive care follow that lead. Now, that obviously is going to take a lot of creative thinking, but I think we really have to figure out, I mean, if you look at adults, adults don't access preventive care nearly like they're supposed to, and most of them go for shots to occupational health. And so maybe we need to start thinking, I mean, adolescents really are between childhood and adults, and we need to sort of be more creative about how we approach all aspects of preventive care with adolescents.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Dr. Harpaz for identifying himself and ask that all questioners follow his lead. So thank you.
Clem Lewin, Novartis Vaccines, a very interesting panel. I'd sort of struck by the discrepancy, or at least it seemed to me, that most parents didn't really want their children adolescent vaccinated in pharmacies, whereas the pharmacists seemed to think that parents would be extremely comfortable with having their children do that. It would seem to address some of the concerns raised in Dr. Middleman's talk, like being there. I was wondering, any thoughts on the discrepancy and how that gap might be closed?
Well, yeah, I mean, we currently, we recently have done a national survey of parents and of adolescents, asking them whether or not they would consider various alternative settings for adolescent immunization. Among those, pharmacies, school-based health centers, and others. And so we don't have the data analyzed yet, so I can't really give you any results, because it was done very recently. But, you know, there may indeed be a discrepancy. And I think pharmacy vaccination is a fairly new phenomenon in a lot of places. It's not very well known that pharmacists have the authority to vaccinate. And, you know, I think that with time, as that becomes better known, there is a possibility that parents may be more willing to accept that for some of the immunizations that their adolescents may get. I don't think anyone, including the pharmacist, want to replace the role of the primary care physician in providing immunizations. That's not what they want to do, but they want to provide a venue where adolescents who did not receive primary care and preventive care services can still get immunized.
Andy Eisenberg, and I actually have two brief questions, if I might. One is, with the emergence of convenient care clinics and retail health clinics in pharmacies, obviously your data didn't show that right now, but that's going to play a part in the mix, probably, again, in major metropolitan areas, et cetera. But how do you see that playing out, and is there any information that you have at this point?
Again, that's part of the national survey we recently did with Harris Interactive of parents and adolescents, and asking them how willing they would be to have the adolescents immunized at these convenient care clinics, either located in pharmacies or in large retail, you know, establishments. We haven't really analyzed the data yet, so I can't really give you the answer because it's just too recent.
And then if I might, one more, I guess more for Dr. Daly with the school-based health clinics and pharmacies to a certain extent. Are you seeing the provision of immunizations in this population and also in the adult population as more of an effect where they're coming in for influenza vaccination, since that's the predominant one being given, and these are given in addition to, kind of as an up-to-date check, or are people actually seeking those services for other reasons?
I think with respect to school-based health centers, that's all going on simultaneously, and so you get the impression that the medical assistants or nurse practitioners or physicians there, they're bringing kids in for vaccination, but then they also will provide primary care either at that time or at another time. It depends on sort of how they like to operate. But given that their goal is to serve as the medical home, the immunizations may be pulling those students in, but they're also trying to provide comprehensive care.
Right. You know, pharmacists are obviously in a different situation there. But I you know, traditionally, the pharmacist's emphasis in immunization has been influenza vaccine. And, you know, so that's what will draw people in. I think some of them hope that, you know, they can also provide other vaccines at that time, especially when one considers some of the multi-dose vaccines like HPV vaccine, where perhaps an individual adolescent might get the first dose at their physician's office, but will need a second or a third dose and will not be, you know, going back to that physician's office perhaps for a year or longer, then the pharmacy could be a convenient place to get that second or third dose.
Thanks.
If I could just add, I think it's going to be really important to think when we look at multi-dose series and multiple vaccines, that I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all. And we saw that with different populations, there's a different level of trust or preference or whatever in terms of different strategies. And I think it's going to take some creativity to sort of fit the majority of adolescents' needs. It's just a different population from the younger pediatric population, and especially when the patient themselves become a player in the decision making.
I'm Richard Judelson, a pediatrician in Buffalo and a member of the New York State Immunization Advisory Council. And my comment kind of takes off from what you just said, Dr. Middleman, that this session today, I think, represents an advancement at the NIC for looking for an expansion of immunization opportunities to get our numbers up. And the numbers I'm referring to for adolescents was shown on a slide very briefly. I don't think it was even up there a second this morning during the update of the National Immunization Survey for Adolescents and the big rise in numbers from 2006 to 2007 for Tdap, MCV4, and HPV. That big rise got us up to 24%. So it means, if you believe that number, that there's 75% that still are not immunized according to our recommendations. I think the presentation about the school-based clinics with very, very impressive numbers is tiny, though. There's 2% of the schools in the United States, and the pharmacists, 262 pharmacists. There's probably 262 pharmacists within 3 miles of this hotel, and right, they're ubiquitous pharmacies all over. So I thought what the presentations came down to was really, again, missed opportunities. If we're to believe the population that was surveyed in Houston, they're not in their medical homes, particularly if my inference is wrong here, correct me, in pediatricians and family practitioners and community clinics, getting immunized because somewhere along the way the opportunity is being missed. And so my question, which probably is more to Dr. Middleman than to anybody else, is there a way that we can go back to what has been a recurring theme for at least 30 of the last 43 national immunization conferences? Don't miss any opportunities and incorporate that into now this expansion of what are just peripheral alternate sites and reemphasize in the central site, that is the medical home, the necessity of getting our immunizations up to optimal levels.
I think that's a great comment, and I would say I think one of the major problems is that we haven't had enough time with adolescent immunizations to get people clicking that you need to educate parents and give immunizations at your adolescent visits. I think people still aren't clicked onto that message. And I think it's going to take time for penetrance to occur throughout the communities. Even though 86% had been to a medical visit in the last 2 years, only 38% could answer that knowledge question. And that's a little, that was actually very sad to me. So I think we do have a lot of work to do, but I think we also have been given much less time than we have been for the pediatric series. Everyone thinks young kids, immunizations, and we're just starting to realize the whole community is just starting to catch on to, oh, adolescence, that's a time where immunizations take place as well. And I think it's going to be just one more step when we're going to have to say, oh, adults, you just became an adult, however that's defined. We won't go into that. But now it's another time to get immunizations. And I think we're just starting to move towards understanding that immunization is a lifespan issue.
One tool for that, I should mention, because I think this audience could make great use of it. Our local immunization action plan nurse coordinator has used funds from originally from CDC to put up billboards that say something like teens need shots too. So it certainly is something that can be done.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment briefly also, putting on my pediatrician hat. I mean, it is possible to minimize missed opportunities to vaccinate in physicians' offices. I mean, in my own practice, we have a very major effort to do so, and we give vaccinations at practically every visit, unless the child is really quite ill. And what you need to do for that is you need to identify an immunization champion within the practice who will really take this on as a responsibility. You have to train all the staff in the practice to recognize when a child or adolescent needs vaccines and what to do, and have it really become part of their system, of their everyday workflow. And it can be done.
Nice comment. We have about 4 minutes left, and I think about four more questions, so.
Mine's quick. I'm Janet Ford, immunization coordinator in Washoe County. That's in Nevada, Reno. My question is, you mentioned, Dr. Schaefer, that pharmacists, a lot of them were certified or went through certification programs. Who provides and designs those? Is it Board of Pharmacy or is it local health districts?
Generally, the largest one is provided by the American Pharmacists Association. But there are also other pharmacist certification programs for immunization.
Carrie Melmed with Public Health, Seattle, King County. Dr. Schaefer, this is for you as well. Among the pharmacists that are immunizing children, I'm curious about access issues. So I would like to know if any of them reported that they're either using VFC, or are they building providers, or is it cash only? And I also would like to know if they're recording any of the immunizations in immunization registries.
It's really quite variable in terms of registry access for the pharmacists. In terms of VFC vaccine, it's my understanding that they're currently not allowed to provide VFC vaccine. It's only physicians' offices and clinics that are allowed to, and not pharmacists at the present time.
Yeah, okay, thank you both.
I'm Dan Hoffitzberger from the Wisconsin Immunization Program. My question's for Dr. Daly. I was struck by your comment where you talked about one of the barriers was the VFC eligibility at clinics as being a problem, as far as especially some schools that aren't inner city, as far in the free lunch program is a good indicator of that. But my question is, did you do anything as far as we're looking at purchasing their own vaccine and then billing private insurers for those individuals who were privately insured?
So we had a number of questions about that. It's a complicated issue, but only 39% of the school-based health centers are currently billing private insurance. So clearly there's some barriers. There's some barriers there. Again, VFC is not a barrier. It's really immunizing the non-VFC eligible students. In terms of what the barriers are for them billing private insurance, we were able to touch on that, but only briefly. It appears that they don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the insurance information from the students, and they just sort of don't have the personnel. So we have some limited data that speaks to that.
Thank you. I'm Jamie Blake, and I work for the registry in Michigan. And my question is for Dr. Middleman. It's a really basic question. I'm trying to help some health departments get with their schools about the adolescent immunizations. And my question is, did you just have questionnaires printed in both English and Spanish, and then those were distributed via the school?
Yes.
Thank you.
That was easy, thank you.
And our final question.
I'm Linda Ori, and I teach at Creighton University School of Pharmacy in Omaha, Nebraska, and also teach with the APHA Pharmacist Delivered Immunization Program. And, you know, I remember, as we teach it in our program, that the head of the health department in Colorado back in the early 90s was said that physicians were very unhappy with him when he supported pharmacist-provided flu shots back in the early 90s. And yet the next year, they found that all of the providers were providing more flu shots. And I guess I'd just like the input from all of you about all of these sites, school-based, pharmacy, et cetera. What are your thoughts about, part of our problem is parents don't know their kids need shots of any kind when they're adolescents, and by providing them in all these alternative sites that we can increase awareness and therefore increase immunizations.
Well, I'd like to take a quick stab at that. I mean, I certainly agree with you. If we want to really achieve high immunization rates for adolescents, we really have to think globally and not think in silos, physician's office, the school, pharmacies, or wherever, but really think of all the opportunities and all the places where adolescents can get immunized. And so developing a system where you can do that. Now, the key to that really is having a robust registry that is easily accessed in all of the different settings, because parents don't know whether their child needs it or not.
I could just comment in terms of pharmacies. Pharmacies have a computer in every pharmacy. They're very used to doing billing, and they're very to insurance companies, and they're very used to using a computer for
right,
reporting
but
data.
Right, but access to registries is limited. Some states allow them to access registries, others don't, and so that they're...
And I want to thank our Nebraska registry, which has been very open to pharmacist involvement.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time and attention, and thanks to each of our speakers.